it's 10 o'clock, let's continue on nanoelectronics. Those are this kind of Godzilla carbon nanotube here in this picture, but usually they are much smaller. And some background, development of electronics. As you all know, Moore's law, that every second year, the number of transistors double in your processor on your computer. So they get smaller and smaller. And there's a kind of technology motivation. You get a better, faster, smaller, of course. Smaller usually means lower power, higher efficiency. And it can be become flexible also. But this is kind of it's more as law, it's just a technological motivation. It's not to any law of nature. It's a law of business. So if it keeps going, it means that every second year they can sell you a new processor and you have to buy it because it's so much better. So industry keeps going. But of course, there's also science motivation. So you will start to get electrical properties that deviate qualitatively from a macro and microelectronics. So as you know, in general, this kind of electronics, some kind of high school demonstration set up here, that you have a current going through, this means that you have a billions of electrons going every second on your wire. And this you are putting in a limit that you're looking single electron or even wave property of that electron or quantum property of that electron. And this means that we have to go to the really nanometer, 1 nanometer, or actually in electronics, it doesn't need to go that small. Yeah. This is a funny picture I always wanted to show about Moore's law. What is the future of that? So things are getting smaller and smaller. In original picture, there looks iPod. Does anyone anymore know what is iPod? It has disappeared. It went so small that it disappeared. So, okay, nanoelectronics. So basically, what is now the topics, main topics for research? For example, displays. You are all the time getting it low power. So you want your mobile phone, nowadays they have a big screen. You have that battery to last long. You also want to make it thinner and you would like to make it flexible. Nowadays, there starts to already be flexible displays. Also electronic circuits, you want to do denser, so you have to fit your processor whatever places. Nowadays already in the phones, but still some smaller places. And you would also like this to be flexible. Then you can put it in a clothing, for example. Transistors, they are getting faster, cooler. This means cooler does not mean this that they are getting hippie, but they are getting really lower in temperature and smaller. Memory chips, same. You can nowadays in a USB stick you can fit how many? 128 gigabytes in a very small space. Solar cells, lasers, they also develop a lot. And then we come to the also in the nanophotonics, which we discuss next week. They are kind of related, at least in a fabrication view. Okay, just a reminder. Everybody remembers that elementary charge is 1.6 to 10 to the power 10 to the power of minus 19 coulombs. And this is a charge of 1 electron. Of course, electron is negative charge, so minus in front. But this is an elementary charge. And if you have a current, you basically, your current is how much charge you have per time. So this is a derivative of your charge, time derivative of your charge. That's the correct way to say it, yes. And your charge in this kind of wire is basically the number of electrons times the electron charge. and how much that varies. So how many electrons go through your some cross section per unit time? So that's your charge. And basic law, so in a, we can very much deal almost only with one law in this lecture, so we don't have to go much further than the Ohm's law. So Ohm's law means you have a voltage, you have a battery, some voltage source, which is pushing your current, and then you have a resistance which is trying kind of preventing your current. So this image tells it all. And you, Ohm's law is basically that your current is voltage divided by resistance. The bigger the resistance, the lower the current. The higher the voltage, the higher the current. So exactly how the image tells. And by that, we can go far. So just to show the classical electronics or transistor. So this is a basic unit. So in a semantics, you draw it like that. And there's a cross section. You can imagine how you can fabricate this by last week's lithographic method. And how it operates is that you have a here, N plus means that this is negatively doped. So you have something. We go to doping later more. So it's more conducting here, and it's not doped here in the middle. So it's basically not very well conducting here, but you can put a voltage here to open a channel. And then the current starts to flow from this end to the other end. So this is basic operation of transistor. So you put voltage across two points. You don't have a current between them until you put voltage to this gate to control that current. You can use that as a switch. Nowadays in the processors, these millions of transistors, they are used as a switch because it's a digital. So it's 0 or 1, and 1 means usually 5 volts. Or you can amplify your signal. So you put more signal here, which makes a big variation of your current, and your signal is amplified. So these are the basic uses of a transistor. But now we go to nanoelectronics, and we have to deal with the quantum transport. So how current or energy transported device when this quantum comes to play? What it means that we have to take into account the quantum effects. In electronics, actually, we don't need to go to 1 nanometer or even below, even 1 micrometer. Devices, we can see quantum effects if we just design them properly. And here's some main topics of electric quantum transport. So metallic nanostructures, so-called tunnel junctions, we discussed already tunneling. Then there's a so-called semiconducting low dimension devices. I will explain this a little bit. And quantized conductance and fabricated quantum dots. These are quite famous words, the quantum dots and quantized conductance. So you know in a quantum mechanics, everything is quantized, so also conductance can be quantized. And let's start from that. So we have a quantum wire. So let's imagine very tiny wire, piece of wire. It is so tiny that basically if you put electron in from one end, it just flies through and comes out. It's so tiny that there's no atoms on the way, or atoms are perfectly oriented in a lattice, so there's no collision. So we can call it so-called ballistic transport. So electron just flies through. Carbon nanotube is pretty close to that. Also semiconducting nanowires, and so on. So we talk about this Ohm's law. So this is another way, usual way to write it. So voltage is a resistance times current. But what it also includes, we have to a little bit define it. So how is this resistance of a material defined? So it's basically, if you have a piece of wire, if it's a copper wire, then it's a macroscopic one. It has a certain length, like 10 centimeters. It has a certain thickness, maybe 0.5 millimeter. And this A here is exactly cross-sectional area. So if it's a 0.5 millimeter, then you calculate the area of the circle pi times R squared. And so basically what you get, the resistance, it depends, the longer the wire is, the higher the resistance, the thicker it is, the bigger the cross-sectional area, the lower the resistance is. You can easily imagine. So if you have a very thin wire and you have to put all the billions of electrons through that, they don't fit very well. But if you have a really thick wire, then they fit very well and go easily through. So resistance goes down if you make it thicker. And if you make it longer, it means that they have to stay there longer. So of course the resistance goes higher. But then you have this parameter here, which is the resistivity of a material. And that depends how the material is constructed. Every material has certain resistivity. And then you take a piece of that material and you can use this formula to calculate its resistance. So in first approximation, we take this very tiny one-dimensional wire. So this means that the cross section, okay, it's one-dimensional, so it doesn't even have any dimensions. So basically the cross section is zero. Resistance is infinite, according to that. But this law does not work in a quantum, in a, this kind of nanoscale. So this law kind of assumes that you have a lot of scattering on the way. And now we have a ballistic transport, which doesn't have any scattering. So we cannot use this anymore. Also, this is not valid. And people developed a new law already in the last millennium. And so if you take this kind of one-dimensional wire, and if you squeeze it as small as you can squeeze it, of course, you can make it a dimension zero, okay, then there's no current. But if you increase a little bit, at some point, your current is exactly related to this resistance, quantum resistance, 12.9, so 13 kilo ohms, or these ohms. And so this is, of course, if this is a resistance, then the conductivity is 1 over the resistance. And so this is the conductivity of a single conducting channel. What is this channel exactly? That's a pretty abstract thing. But so it's kind of it's hard to say what is exactly the one channel. But it's a one conductance quantum. And if you start from a zero and increase your diameter, at some point you get one conductance quantum in. If you increase the diameter more, you get a second channel open and you have a two quantum conductivity through the same wire. And here is the first measurement of this. So at a zero, you basically have a zero, but very soon when you, okay, here is a parameter, is a gate voltage. So this is a voltage which is kind of opening your channel. So you can think it like a channel width directly. So you start opening your channel, you immediately get one conductance quantum. Here you get the second, first one, fourth one, and so on. So you open channel by channel and you can really measure these channels of measure conductivity of a single channel. And this is kind of the formula for that. If you have any scattering between, you can make it lower. So T is maximum one. And if we talk about ballistic transport, so electron goes in and it's a flight through and comes out. Why there's any resistance? And this is because when you measure, you have to connect other wires, which means that after this 1D channel, it starts to scatter immediately. And this induces the resistance. So basically, if there would be way to measure your wire without connecting your measurement device, probably there would be infinite conductivity. But since there's no way to do it, you always get these channels. So this is a first proof of a quantized conductivity. This can be also kind of related to this basic particle in a box model. So this is from quantum mechanics. I'm not going it through here, but you know that all particle, they can be also dealt as a waves. You can calculate the wavelength by h bar divided by p, which is a momentum, so mass times the velocity. So it depends on the velocity of your particle and mass of your particle. You get this called De Broglie wavelength, which describes your particle. And now if you take this kind of box with infinite walls, so these are infinite potential walls, so there's no tunneling out in this slide. And you think your particle inside, it starts to go back and forth. You can describe the possible modes of that particle, how it can bounce there mechanically. But in a quantum mechanics, it's much more easier to deal it with a wavelength. So you can have a certain momentum, certain speed for your particle, mass is fixed. And then you basically, for your particle to survive in the box, you have to match the wavelength or half wavelength to this box. Because then it's kind of interfering itself. So this is a kind of a nice thing in quantum mechanics or mystery thing in quantum mechanics. Everything interferes and they also interfere with themselves. So now you have a particle, describe it by certain wavelength. And if this wavelength fits to your box, then it kind of interferes constructively. So you always get maximum at the same point. So you kind of sum these maximums. Every time you pass around, you put one amplitude more. So you increase your amplitude. So constructive interference. Your waves are summing up. But if your wavelength does not match let's just draw it here also. If your wavelength is, for example, I took some mode like that. So it wave comes here and then it bounces back like that. It means that always here you have a maximum. And you, if you calculate the amplitude, you basically sum up the amplitudes. Here the amplitude is actually zero. And every time it goes through, it just increases. So you make a big wave inside your box. But if the wavelength does not match, then it comes out in some other way, for example, like that. And then you can have a canceling of your wave even. So basically, your sum is not getting higher and higher, but it's just getting some tiny ripples everywhere. And That's a destructive interference, and it means at the finally your amplitude is zero. So only modes what you can have if you really have an infinite wall are the modes drawn here. So half of a wavelength fits, full wavelength fits, or 1.5 or 2 and so on. And this means, if you look at this de Broglie wavelength, that's a 2 pi over k, actually this is a better form. Yeah. H, which is a Planck's constant, divided by mass and velocity. And you have it here. So basically in a one dimension, this means that your energy have to be some multiplicand of this kind of unit. So now here we take a half a wavelength. So that's why there's a 2 here. There's no 2 here, but because we are now talking about half a wavelength fitting. So we calculate how many half wavelengths we have there. So that's why 2 here. And now we can basically take as many of these wavelengths as we want. So the n is some integer number. 1, 2, 3, 4. These are exactly this. 1, 2, 3, 4. How many half wavelengths you fit in. And this is your possible energies. Nothing else. That's a basically basic particle in the box. And you can imagine, and then of course this L is a length of the box. So that comes to play when you calculate this formula. The smaller the box, the bigger is the energy distance between the modes. And if you think infinite piece of material, so you take this wire, it's a box also. It's a 15 centimeter box. But if you put 15 centimeter here, the separation between two different energy modes comes basically zero. You don't see it anymore. That's why in a macroscopic world, we don't see this effect. But if you make this 1 nanometer, then the energy difference is already huge. And you start to see this mode. So that's why the quantum mechanics come to play. And of course, nothing is 1D. You have 2D, so you have different length in other dimension, and you have different quantization in other dimension. And of course, everything in a reality is a 3D, so you have 3 different dimensions here, and you have 3 different quantizations, so your total energy depends on the 3 different parameters. In what mode you are in what direction. So what is your speed in this direction? What is your speed in this direction? And what is your speed in this direction? And this n tells that. If you think this kind of very tiny device, quantum box, or quantum dot, people are calling it. So now we make our box tiny, tiny, tiny. Then it's also called quantum dot. And these are the energy levels inside our dot. So these are the potential barriers. Actually these lines here. And this is our dot. Where we have this is state 1, this is state 2, state 3, and so on. Now you can see there's a little bit multiple lines, because this is usually happens because you have 3D. So you have a little bit different dimension in every direction. So that's why it kind of separates to 3 different. But we don't need to care about that right now. So we have state 1, 2, 3, and so on. And you can put particles in one by one. And here we talk about zero dimension transport, because if we think this our quantum dot as a conductor, as it is, because it can store electrons, it is kind of conductor. It doesn't have a dimension because it's squeezed in every direction. So it's just a very, very tiny dot. And only way to put electrons in is tunneling. So here, this bar here, this is kind of metal. So there's all states are possible. Metal has a continuum of space state. Here also. And why some of them are white is because they are empty and these are occupied. So these states are full of electrons and these are empty. Now, what is this line here? Wait a second, we come to that, not yet, but so this is so-called Fermi level. You discussed chemical potential of Fermi level with Kaisa in a molecule, did you?
We did not.
You did not? Okay. Today we will.
I guess we did, but I don't remember with this
process. I never remember correctly. It could be that you also remember some other course, I don't know. Yeah. Let's just in case define it a little bit better now. Fermi level. What is Fermi level? That's a level, so this is an energy. And Fermi, and you have some kind of material. Now let's assume like a metallic material, so we don't have a stage. Everything is possible. All states are so close to each other that we don't care. And we have certain amount of electrons. So if you take any metal, for example, aluminium, gold, you know, in a metal, the outer electrons are kind of free to move. And you have certain amount of these electrons and you start to feel your states from the bottom. At some point, you run out of electrons. Okay, so that was the last one. No more electrons available. So these will stay empty, and these are filled. And between is your Fermi level. This is exactly the point where you run out of electrons. So if you go to zero temperature, all your electrons are in these states here, and these states are empty. So this is a definition of a Fermi level. If you think, so this is at the temperature zero, absolute zero, you never get there. But if you think now, I would still like to have a color. Hey, there might be color. Boring, only white. So, if you increase the temperature from a zero, what happens is some of these states get empty and you get electrons here at these states. So this is a case if temperature is higher, okay, not smaller than zero, higher than zero. Then your distribution is like that. But your Fermi level is still defined here, exactly in the middle point. So this is definition of a Fermi level. That holds also if you have a state. Certain states are filled. So here it's filled, 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 and these are no more filled. It doesn't matter if you have a continuous distribution of states or just a quantized states like in a particle in a box. The point where you run out of electrons, that's your Fermi level. And in a metal, we have a nice trick. Now I made a mess already here, so I have to make a new one. So this is our Fermi level, and let's just talk about zero temperature. That's just not everything so much nicer. But you know that everything will be smeared at the room temperature. But here in the metal, these are filled and these are empty. And this is exactly how I mentioned earlier. E times the voltage you apply. So if you put positive voltage, you actually move your Fermi level up because you add positive charge and you can feed more negative electrons to compensate. So you have more electrons available. You start filling, and if you put a negative, you kind of push your electrons away and this goes down. So we have a control of a Fermi level in a metal. This doesn't work like this nicely for molecules and so on, but for metals it works. Now in this image, basically, what you see here is one metal. Okay, it's a mu one, it means chemical energy. It's the same than the Fermi energy. So let's, sometimes it's called chemical potential. It's the same thing, almost. There's a tiny differences, but these tiny differences we don't care now. So chemical potential is the same than the Fermi energy. Maybe you talked about chemical potential, actually, with Kaisa. Nobody remembers. Yeah. Okay, but here you have a metal with certain Fermi level, and here you have a metal with a certain Fermi level. What happens here is because these black ones, it means that they are filled with electrons. These white ones, they are empty. So here you can tunnel your electron out because there is, at the same level of energy, there is an empty state. So you can tunnel out. In this direction, you cannot tunnel out because there's no space. All states are filled. And all the time here, we remember we are at the zero temperature. Temperature is zero. Let's just assume this now, until I tell otherwise. This means that if temperature is zero, you cannot get energy for your particle from a thermal path. And you cannot put energy to thermal path. It means that all tunneling happens horizontally. There's no jumping up. So you cannot jump from here to here because you would need this much energy and there's no thermal energy available to give it to you. So you cannot tunnel here, but you can tunnel here. So by this method, you can fill your quantum dot and you can measure your states here. Okay, so quantum, it is exactly, you have to use tunneling, which we, okay, I saw this already, so let's forget it now. You already know what is tunneling. One other thing which comes to play in a tiny electronics is a capacitor. So we have to remember that Ohm's law, and this basically tells everything. And if you don't remember what is a capacitor, it means, for example, two metal plates close to each other, not touching. There's an insulator between. So there's no current going through. But if you apply voltage, you put positive charge here and a negative charge on other plate. Now, how much charge per voltage you can put in this capacitor, that's determined by the capacitance of your capacitor. So that's a unit, capacitance. And that is you get, if you divide the charge you can put with a certain voltage, so you charge divided by voltage, that tells kind of a capacitance of your capacitor. As the name tells, it's a capacitance, how much you can put things in. And this time, this thing you're putting in is a charge. So you have this basic relation. And if you are putting a charge here, you are of course putting energy there because you are forcing the charge in. And energy of the capacitor you can calculate, this looks like a kinetic energy. Half times M times V squared. So you get to exactly same form here. So it's half times, but instead of mass, you have a capacitance, and then you have a voltage squared. You can form it, you can write it also like here. If you put instead of C, you put Q over V here, you get to this form. Or you can manipulate by this form into this form also. It depends what you want to use. So these are the same form, but the middle one is the most common. So this is the other basic element instead of resistance, what we need. And let's talk about this kind of very tiny capacitor. So this is like a 1 nanometer metallic plate, separated by 1 nanometer or even less. So if we assume 100 nanometer diameter, and we know the capacitance is actually, it's related to the area and the distance, of course. But if you assume this 1 nanometer separation and 100 nanometer diameter, we can calculate the capacitance of about 1 femtofarad. So farad is a unit of capacitance. And femto means 10 to minus 15. So this is really small capacitance. And if we calculate the energy of that, so this energy, if we put single electron in, so we are now using this last formula. So we have a charge, how much we have in a capacitor divided by, or square of a charge divided by capacitance. And if we put one electron in, so it's an electron charge squared divided by capacitance, and there's this half. And if we calculate that energy, it corresponds to the energy of 1 Kelvin approximately. And now we can, in a laboratory, we can pretty easily cool our device below 1 Kelvin. So this is already pretty close to the absolute zero. And we are, as I mentioned, we are now thinking about zero temperature, and this in reality, it means that we are below this. Then it means that we can measure the energy of a single electron in this capacitor. And now, since this is also very thin, these electrons can easily tunnel through. So we also have a current through this capacitor, and that's how we can change the number of electrons in somewhere. We come to that. And basically, we can, so as this was a symbol for a capacitor, two plates separated, this is a symbol for tunnel junction, so it looks like a capacitor, but they are kind of connected, so there's tunneling possibility, meaning that. And usually, since we have this quantized conductivity, this tunneling resistance is also bigger than a single resistance quantum, which was this 13 kilo ohm. The simplest device we can fabricate is a single electron box. We have a voltage source, we have a capacitor, and we have a tunnel junction, which is basically also a capacitor. And if you think this between the two capacitors. That's your box. Because that's separated from everything. Because capacitor don't have a connection. There's an insulator between. So any electron inside this box, it cannot escape here. It can escape here by tunneling, but that's the only way. And so basically, if you calculate the total capacitance of this box, so basically the sum of two capacitances, which we have a tunnel junction and a capacitor, so you let's just mark it like this. And total charge in the box is the number of electrons, N times electron charge. And also, if you put voltage here, you induce some charge to this capacitor. And that's based on a formula we had in a couple of slides ago. This charge is voltage times the capacitance of this so-called gate capacitor. So this is a total charge of your box. And this is a total capacitor, capacitance of your box. Now we can calculate the charging energy. So this is charge squared divided by capacitance and this factor of 2 here, which was in a formula. So your charging energy comes like that. And now if you think that you have, for example, you have 0 electrons in your box, then it's just a parabola as a function of Vg. So this axis here, that's your voltage. And if we have a 0 electrons, we just have a parabola around 0. So it's this energy here. But of course, we can tunnel in one more electron. Then we have a number 1 here. And what it does, it just shifts your parabola to this point. Now your charging energy is this. Then you can add second electron, then your charging energy is this, or first electron, or 4, and so on. For every number of electrons, you have a different parabola here, describing your charging energy. So the total energy of the system, because the terminal energy, we assume 0. So now if you start increasing gate from here, so basically your energy is minimum, but then it starts to increase. At this point, if you keep your electrons same amount, you just increase energy more and more and more. But system wants to go to the lowest possible energy. So it doesn't continue here, but one electron tunnels in at this point, and then you continue this curve. And then you come to next crossing, and the second electron tunnels in. So you keep always in this lowest branch, and you keep increasing number of electrons on your box. And you can even measure these electrons. So here is a number of electrons. So here is from here to here, it's 1. From here to here, it's 2. And at a 0 temperature, this is very sharp change of number of electrons. And of course, if temperature increases, you just mirror it out a bit, but you can still measure it. So that's why it's called single electron box.
If you rise the temperature enough, I guess the box will break and it's just
bigger. Yeah, it will come just a linear if you increase too much. And basically the limit is here. If your thermal energy starts to be bigger than charging energy, then this just go to straight line and you don't anymore see electrons. Of course, if you decrease the capacitance, that has another effect. And you can basically, if you decrease it enough, you can make it even happening at the room temperature, but we have managed once to do it, but it was very noisy. But basically, it's possible. Okay, let's complicate a bit. Let's talk about single electron transistor. Now we added the second tunnel junction here. And our box is again this area. And there's an n number of electrons. Now, what is the difference? Basically, if you look only this part, it is exactly the same. But now the possibility is that we can have a electron tunneling in and tunneling out. So we can have a current. In a box, there's no possibility to have a current here because we have this capacitor stopping the current all the time. There's no tunneling possibility here. But here we do have. And now, if you think the situation, we can make a similar calculation for charging energy. It looks exactly the same. If you multiply this in, if you put this formula here, it looks exactly the same. But, and we can draw a parabolas, but this is actually more easier to understand by this diagram, which is similar, what we just draw already. Let's make a new one. Okay, now I accidentally wiped the zero temperature reminder, so please remember it. Always the zero temperature. So, we have our single electron transistor, and then we have this gate capacitance here. These are connected to the voltage source, but I don't draw it now, just for clarity. Okay. Let's draw a similar thing. This is the energy. Then we have a tunneling barrier here. And here, exactly. So this is kind of a position. This is matching exactly to our drawing. So we have a tunneling barrier here, which is drawn here. And now what we have inside is kind of energy levels. So this means, so let's assume this is a level where we have a, let's make it a little bit bigger. Number of electrons is zero. And you see it also a little bit hard for you, maybe.
Sure,
yeah. Okay. This one electron, then here we have, okay, zero electron, one electron, two electron, and so on. And these are equal distance because always you add this. If you increase here n, you increase the energy by this amount here. So this is the separation you have here. Let's draw here also minus one. How it was in the slide, it was C, easy. So this is your energy separation. So you have a quantized state inside. So this is a little bit similar to quantum dot, but not exactly. These are equally spaced. And now, let's assume we have here metal. And this is our Fermi level. Now, based on this, that we are at a zero temperature, tunneling can happen, but only horizontally. Can anyone tell, is there current going through? Can electron tunnel from this side to this side? Or other way around. I hear good.
I
no. Yeah, why not? Can you explain any?
Because when it goes to between those to some instructions, it has to go to level 1 or level 0 or level minus 1, but it can't get to the another side.
Yeah, exactly. So I repeat it because you probably online people didn't hear anything. So this is exactly. So you can basically, I don't know where is a Fermi level here. We didn't define it. But it basically doesn't matter. So if this state is empty, you can tunnel in here. But you cannot tunnel out because all these states are filled. So that's not possible. So your electron can tunnel in, but that's it. No current through. Also, you cannot jump there because that's forbidden. We are in a zero temperature. You can tunnel out, of course, because there's an empty state. But if you happen to have one electron there, that can tunnel out, yes. But that's not the current yet, one electron. Because you cannot get the second one in. So there's no current. Let's change the situation a bit. Okay, I ruined my tunnel junctions, but they are still here. Let's put some voltage between this end and that end. How about now? Is the current possible? So I put some voltage here. Nobody dares to say online, or everybody is in a sleep. Yes, it is possible. You can immediately see that, okay, if you have a one electron here, it can easily tunnel out because there's empty space. Then it's empty. You can have the new electron coming in, and then that tunnels out, and all the time you have electrons going through. You have a current. Now, one thing what I didn't mention yet is that we have this gate voltage, which couples through this gate capacitance. And by that, we can move this ladder up and down. Every state will move up and down. So, let's start moving them. So these were the original positions. I don't remember exactly where they were, but and now I don't draw ends anymore. Ends are there. So now if we move this, there's of course one here somewhere, same distance below. If we move them all up so that we come to this kind of position, these thick lines. So these are now the states we moved by the gate voltage. Is the current now possible? Everybody still in a sleep or totally out? Yes, there's no current. Because from here, this state, you cannot tunnel out because all the states are filled. You can tunnel in, but that doesn't help much. You just fill it and that's it. Here, you can tunnel out, because there's an empty, but you cannot tunnel in because you don't get this extra energy you would need. So there's no current. So that's why the name, transistor. You change the gate voltage and you have current, or you don't have a current. In this picture, if we are at a zero temperature, immediately when one of these states comes between these two levels, you have a full current, and then you have a, if the situation is like that, you have zero current. But you can assume that if a temperature is not zero, you have smooth transition from a zero current to the full current by changing the gate. And of course, if you increase this voltage, then you increase the separation here. And then you can have even three states between these levels, and then you have even three times more current. And then you cannot anymore block it. So this is so-called Coulomb blockade. It's exactly this situation, that you have voltage, but you cannot have a current because of this charging energy you would need. So this is so-called Coulomb blockage. But of course, by tuning the gate voltage, you can get the current flowing, and then you are away from a Coulomb blockage. So this is a single electron transistor. So this is a good point to make a break. So let's continue 10 past. Now is also a good time to ask questions.
Yeah, this was a little bit confusing.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, very well.
Okay, is there one electron in one vertical line in the drawing?
You mean one electron per line? Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so when the voltage rises and the what are those called again? The both sides.
This voltage. So this rises. Yeah.
Sorry, I can't see what you are pointing at because my net.
This goes down and this goes up.
The other went down and other went up. Yeah. Okay.
Separation
so
increase.
When there is the network is not very good. So if they are if the difference is bigger between them and there is more lines, vertical lines between them, there is more current. Is that correct?
Yeah. So situation can be, for example, this is a smaller picture. So situation can be also like that.
Yeah.
And now there's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 between.
Yeah.
And
okay. Well, you look to me like a slideshow. So, yeah, I had a little hard time understanding there, but yeah, thanks. Now I think I understood.
Yeah. So if you haven't dealt at any time by this kind of diagrams, it is a bit hard to understand. But if you get the idea how they work, then that's a very easy way to explain phenomena without calculating anything.
Yeah. Thank
you. So that's why I hope you get the idea.
Yeah, I think I got it.
Because we are dealing with this more. So if you have a question, now is a good time. But if it's clear now, then...
Hello, may I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So, what makes the wall, you know, change up or down? Is the temperature or voltage or both?
Changing this up and down.
Yeah, I mean, the wall.
This one?
Yes.
So the voltage?
The voltage?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that's the voltage between this point and this point.
Well, what does the temperature influence?
Temperature only influences here that it messes up things. So
the electrons in the wall.
Yeah, so none of the lines is anymore sharp, but they come as a distribution.
Okay.
And also these levels here, they are smeared as I draw in a previous picture like that.
Okay.
Nothing is any more sharp. It makes us everything round.
Okay, thanks.
So it's much easier to just think how it works first at a zero temperature, and then you get this kind of curves, what we have here in a slide.
Mm-hmm.
For example, maybe this is so messy picture already, I take it away. So basically, if you think this voltage and current, and as we saw that in a very tiny voltage, you don't get a current, and then you start to get a current. So these are sharp.
Mm-hmm.
But now what happens? If you put temperature, they just go smear, and it looks like that. So this is at the high temperature. This really thick line. So it just smears out. And if you put really high temperature, then it's just like that. Everything is washed away. And how this was moved up and down was by this gate voltage. Yeah, I could have drawn these here, but they are in a slide. So let's go back to this particle in a box, what we had earlier. But now let's assume that we have a lattice, not just a box, but we have a periodic lattice. So we have atoms in the lattice. So you can basically think this as a box. Then we have a many boxes, similar boxes. And if we have a, of course we have a 2D lattice, actually we have 3D lattice, but that's difficult to draw. But in the 2D lattice, we have also box in this direction. Also, we have a boxes in this direction. Or this direction, whatever direction. We have many directions and many sides of the boxes. And this, basically this energy state, they are quantized along all these dimensions. And if you try to make some kind of plot, you end up messy picture like that. So these coordinates, which doesn't tell you anything, they are just now the directions. Which direction they are. There's some kind of lattice physics which tells you exactly the meaning of the symbols, but let's not care about those. They are different directions. And for different orientations of movement, you have a different energy levels. And if you plot them all for all orientations, you get this so kind of these kind of lines which are wiggling around. We don't care about now what are the orientations, what are the directions, but what we can see from this picture is that there is areas where at any energy you can find some state with some direction. And so these are so-called bands, energy bands. So all these states are available if we don't care about the direction. And there is red areas where despite the direction, there's no state anywhere. So these are the gaps, energy gaps. There's no states available. So all these blue ones are energy bands and red ones are energy gaps. And now basic properties of any material is exactly derived by that. So let's now forget these wiggling lines and let's just draw the bands and gaps. So if we have an insulator, it means that we have a band available here and then our Fermi energy lies exactly here. And here we have empty state, empty band. And this is our energy gap. So for electrons to move around along the conductor, so you have to move the electron from here to other side. So that means that it cannot stay in a one state because every state is bound to a certain position. It can be, for example, this kind of orbit or whatever. But really to move around, you need scattering. You need to be able to change the state. And in this case, you cannot because all these states are filled. You cannot take electron and put to the second state. They are bound to the state. Only thing you could, and here is there's no electrons to scatter. That's just empty. Only thing you could do to scatter is to take electron from here to here. From this so-called valence band to conduction band. If you do that, then you can scatter and then you can move electron. But you need energy of this gap. And if this gap is big, like 2 electron volts or something, room temperature don't provide it. Or especially if we are in a zero temperature, then certainly we don't have a possibility. So these are insulators. Okay, 1.5 was the limit, not 2. So these are the insulators. If we reduce the energy gap, then we have certain possibility to have electrons at the conduction band. Of course, if we still deal with a zero temperature, there's no possibility. Because you don't get energy from here to here, from temperature. But if you think room temperature, then that's enough to give energy for one electron to go to conduction band. And so this is so-called semiconductor, for example, silicon. You always have at room temperature some electrons at the conduction band. But if you cool it down to zero temperature, it's insulator. And metal, this means that there's no gap at all, or gap is not at the Fermi level. So you always have a situation that just below Fermi level, you have filled state, and above Fermi level, you have empty state, just like we draw in the last hour. And then you can have a as tiny energy as possible to scatter your electrons to the next empty state. So that's a really easy scattering, and that's why metals conduct very well. So this is kind of classification of insulator, semiconductor, and metal. Everything depends on this band structure, which is based on a particle in the box. In a semiconductor, we have this, all electrons are basically bound, but as we just saw, in a room temperature, there's enough energy to excite some of them, but you can increase this probability by doping it, so-called n-type doping. N means negative, so you put more electrons, you put more negative charge. For example, you put arsenic here in the middle of silicon. So that has 5 valence electrons. So every silicon has 4, and they are being to these bonds to the next silicon. But now you put arsine there, and you have 1 extra because only 4 are taken by these bonds. And this 1 extra can easily go to conduction band. Actually, it goes, this is the energy level. So this is your valence band, and this is your conduction band. Actually, it goes somewhere between, but above the Fermi level. And from there, it's very easy to scatter to the conduction band because the gap is really tiny. You increase the conductivity. P-type doping is a little bit opposite. You take, for example, gallium, which means which only have a 3 electrons. So one of these connections are missing an electron, and you basically you have a hole. You can think hole as a positive particle, which moves. In reality, it means that the 1 electron fills the hole and leaves a hole here, and the next electron fills that hole and leaves a hole here. But you can also think that the hole moves. And these states are here. So these are kind of below the Fermi level, but so that from here, from a valence band, you can easily fill them. And then you have a scattering. So you increase conductivity also. And this is actually the one of the biggest thing in the semiconductor industry. So you have a conductor, which is current is flowing right in this figure, which means that electrons are going left. This is for historical reasons, it was defined this way. And this is a kind of conductor wire. But if you have an n-type semiconductor, then you have extra electrons. So basically the situation is exactly the same than in a metal. So electrons are carrying the current. But if you have a p-type semiconductor, which we just described here, it has these holes, and you can think holes as a positive particles. So then these holes are carrying the current, and they are going this direction since they are positive, the same direction as the current. Now, very naive explanation to explain famous p-n junction. It means that you have a p-type semiconductor and n-type semiconductor. Is this, and now you put them here together. So this is p-type, so holes are making current, and this is n-type. And the current is flowing that direction. So holes are coming here to right, while electrons are coming here to left, and they meet in the middle. And what happens? Electron goes to the hole. It fills the hole. They just disappear. And the current is flowing, but your charge is basically annihilating here in the middle. But if you try to push a current another direction, then these positive charges go left here, and the electrons go right here. And since this, at some point you run out of the holes and run out of electrons because you cannot fill them anymore because there's a joint. there's no holes here to come to this side because this is n-type, another way around. So you make an empty area here and no current flow anymore. So that's a diode. Basically, current goes only to one direction, but not another direction. So that's a basically diode as a component. And all the semiconductor industry nowadays is based on that. So, as a summary, yeah, we went through electrons are waves in a discrete energy levels, can tunnel, and then we discussed about single electron transistors.